Good evening and welcome to the February 3rd Columbia City Council regular city council meeting. I invite all those who are able to please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
What's happening in there? All right, Sheila, will you please call roll?
Mr. Foster?
Here.
Mr. Waterman?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Ms. Buffalo?
Here.
Ms. Carroll?
Here.
Ms. Meyer?
Here.
Mr. Lovelady?
Here.
All right, well, good evening. There are multiple opportunities for public to speak at Columbia City Council meetings. We have opportunities under public hearing, old business, and new business portions of the agenda. I do ask that people confine their remarks to the agenda item being discussed and the legislation we are voting on. Individuals can speak for 3 minutes with representatives of organizations affected by the ordinance requesting 5 minutes. I do ask that we have one organization representative for each item. General comments at the end of the council meeting. You can talk about anything on the council meeting or anything else you want to discuss. I do ask that people avoid applause, boos, or other demonstrations except for special items like retirements. We ask that people address issues, not individuals, and refrain from personal attacks, including on city staff. Disruptions will be addressed with a warning and, if necessary, removal and recess. So moving on in our agenda, I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion to approve the January 21st, 2025 regular meeting minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Are there any changes to the agenda? Seeing none, I make a motion to approve the agenda as posted. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Roy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Now moving on to our special item. We have a resolution of appreciation for Stacy Button, so I'll ask for Stacy Button to please meet me at the podium. Hope I don't break it. All right, so we're here to recognize the retirement of Stacy Button, our Director of Economic Development. So we have a resolution of appreciation on behalf of the Columbia City Council that I'd like to read for you. So whereas Stacy Button began her employment with the City of Columbia on January 5th, 2015, as the Director of Economic Development and President of the Regional Economic Development Incorporated, or REDI, and whereas Stacy Button will retire from employment with the City of Columbia on February 3rd, 2025, after over 10 years of dedicated and honorable service to the benefit of all of Columbia and Boone County citizens, and whereas Stacy Button has maintained the highest standards of professionalism and personal conduct, and whereas it is the desire of Mayor and the City Council to recognize and thank Stacy Button for her outstanding public service and assistance to this and former City Councils. So now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council extends its heartfelt thanks to Stacy Button for her dedicated public service and her commitment to keeping Columbia a viable city. We wish her much joy, happiness, and good health in her retirement. Thank you. Stacy has opted to say a few words.
Often.
Yes.
Thank you. Just a few. Thank you. I remember standing here a little over 10 years ago taking the oath, and honestly, I never could have imagined all of the opportunities that would present themselves over the years. And that's really from projects to programs and to the pandemic. We've really persevered through all of that. And had the opportunity to accomplish so much through job creation and business development. And our community continues to thrive. I'm incredibly proud of the work that we've done. I'm grateful for the partnerships, the friendships, and humbled to have led such an incredible team at REDI and the airport. So in sincerity and friendship, I really thank all of you, Council, as well for the opportunity to serve. And many of you know I take my wisdoms from Winnie the Pooh at times. And so I'll finish with this quote. How lucky I am to have something that makes saying goodbye so hard. So I appreciate all of you and this opportunity. So thank you for that, and thank you for the resolution.
Thank you for that. All right, moving on to scheduled public comment. So members of the public can contact the city manager's office by noon the Wednesday before the city council meeting to schedule public comment. Scheduled public comment cannot be on items that are on the same night's agenda. And of note, it's been typical practice of city council to ask for additional follow-up of questions of staff at the end of the meeting if it's warranted. So tonight we have three scheduled public comments. I'd like to first ask William Easley to come forward to speak.
Right here.
Does anyone see Bill Easley? Okay. We will contact, I'll have, can the city manager's office contact? Fine, thank you. Next, I'd like to ask Jeannie Locklear to please come forward.
Good evening. My name is Jeannie Locklear, and I've lived at 4400 Thornbrook Ridge, which is in the 5th Ward, for over 9 years. On behalf of varied homeowners within my subdivision, I respectfully request up to 5 minutes. Thank you, Madam Mayor, City Council members, and city leadership for giving me this opportunity to make a plea for your assistance in protecting our children from irresponsible drivers, specifically on Thornbrook Ridge. It is important to have some background information regarding any traffic calming or management issues over the years. And according to the Neighborhood Management Program score sheet prioritization in 2023, Thornbrook Ridge was listed as number 15, and the year requested was 2013. Besides a portable radar speed trailer being set in place a few times over the years, there has been no movement in attempting to reduce the speed of vehicles. The current speed limit is 25 miles an hour, and I am confident without the exact numbers that cars are exceeding the posted speed limit by a minimum of 15 to 25 miles per hour. As recently as this past Christmas Eve, my neighbor, who has 4 young children, had their mailbox and column hit. At such a hard impact, it was dislodged from its steel support, concrete base, and was thrown 50 feet from its original location, landing in the center of the roadway near my driveway entrance. I have signatures of various concerned homeowners in Thornbrook, and out of the first 3 homeowners contacted, 4400 through 4600 Thornbrook Ridge, each has had a minimum of 3 times that their wrought iron, concrete, and steel-enforced mailboxes and posts were damaged by vehicles to the extent that they had to be replaced. One street sign has been damaged, one street light has been damaged, and numerous front yards have had the irrigation system heads destroyed, all by irresponsible speeding drivers. I personally was a narrow miss of speeding drivers twice, head-on, while in my vehicle, stopped with my turn signal on. I was once narrowly missed by an irresponsible speeding driver when I was standing by my mailbox, not in the street, but near the curb, retrieving my mail. But please understand, I do not come before you to make an issue of the costly continued property damage occurring on my street due to irresponsible speeding drivers. I come before you today to plead with you to help make our community safe for our children. The children in our community love the outdoors and can be found under adult supervision outside playing in our front yards on any given day. It may be one or more of the 4 little girls that live next to me. They could be building a snowman, running down the hill between my house and theirs, affectionately calling me Murphy, which happens to be our chocolate lab's name, or just walking down the sidewalk or riding their tricycles. All it would take is one irresponsible speeding driver to have a mechanical malfunction or not paying attention and one of these children could be hit and seriously injured or killed. No parent should ever experience the loss of a child, which is the most devastating event a parent could ever experience, and I do know this firsthand. I believe we have an opportunity, you have an opportunity, to help protect our children. I respectfully request you implement immediate measures, which would be instructing city management to strategically place speed humps on Thornbrook Ridge without further delay. We have already been waiting since 2013. I thank you for your time, for listening, and my plea is to help make Columbia a better place to live, work, learn, and play for our children's sake. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'd like to ask Ruth Williamson to please come forward to speak. Is there a Ruth Williamson? All right, if we can have staff reach out to Carlin and follow up with this one. All right, moving on to public hearings. Sheila, will you please read public hearing 325?
Yes. Public hearing 325 is the proposed construction of a sidewalk along the south side of Vandiver Drive between Oakland Gravel Road and Parker Street.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes. Good evening. My name is Shane Creech, and I'm the Public Works Director. This project would construct a 5-foot concrete sidewalk along the south side of Vandiver Drive between Oakland Gravel and Parker Street. The proposed sidewalk will tie into an existing sidewalk near the Parker Street roundabout and end at the Oakland Gravel Road intersection. The signal at Vandiver and Oakland Gravel will be improved to include a pedestrian sign and crosswalk for pedestrians to cross Vandiver Drive. The sidewalk will also be constructed such that it can be extended to a possible future trail along the Colt Railroad. An interested parties meeting was held on December 11th, 2024. Construction of the improvements are anticipated to be underway by the summer of 2026. The project has a cost estimate of just over $682,000, with 80% of the funding coming from MoDOT's Transportation Alternatives Program, or TAP grant funds. The remaining 20% will be funded with the city's quarter cent capital improvement sales tax. Allison Anderson, the engineering manager over the project, is with me here tonight, and we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff?
No questions.
All right, seeing none, I'll go ahead and open up the public hearing. Would anybody from the public wish to speak on the proposed construction of a sidewalk on Vandiver Drive from Oakland Gravel to Parker Street? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. Council comments. Yeah, Valerie, and I'll go.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thank you for this project. Thank you for the future-minded connections. I appreciate that. I'm interested. I did ask some questions ahead of council, and I have a lot of answers, and I have a lot of questions still. The Vandiver to Route B, that was number 13 on the sidewalk master plan?
I'm not sure of the exact number.
Okay. I guess I'm interested in what drove this one to happen at this time.
The best I can tell you is this is the next public hearing we're going to have on Oakland Gravel is the third project along Oakland Gravel. And this section of Vandiver connects. A lot of times we have conversations with MoDOT where we look at projects that have mutual interest or that they have some interest in. And so when those things line up, that's usually what we try to apply for a TAP grant for. So we had that opportunity. So, I mean, that's the major reason that we pursue one over another.
Yeah. So this was interesting to me because Oakland Gravel to the east, no. Yeah, to the east of, Vandiver to the east of Route B is also a sidewalk master plan. It was number 7 and they were scored very similarly. And I guess, did MoDOT have an interest in this one ahead of that one? This one.
So when we apply for TAP grants, they mm-hmm. like us. So MoDOT has an unfunded needs list that our planning department works through with them, and we supply them with our top 10 multimodal unfunded needs.
Yeah.
And the Vandiver project that's on here and the Oakland Gravel as well were both on the list that we had worked out with MoDOT for the unfunded needs. And for their TAP grants, they like us to kind of work through that list before we move on to other projects. The other part of Andrew you're talking about is kind of moving up, that it will be like each year they update the unfunded needs. So it's moving up. I know in the draft it's included in the next list of unfunded
Got
needs.
It. Yeah, so it's just a comparison of lists. It's good to hear that it's on their next
also,
list as well as ours. It's also funny to me. I agree with this project. I like the timing of this project because of the many businesses and the location of the food bank. And it's funny to me that just through the scoring system that we have, the one east of Route B is 1 point higher, and I'm not sure how that comes out, but I'm glad that our lists agreed in this way. Thanks for satisfying my curiosity.
Lisa, you had a question or comment.
Yes, this is in Ward 2, and I have had absolutely no constituents concerned about this project. I appreciate all of your hard work and positivity to getting it on the council scheduled tonight for us to have an opportunity to vote for it.
Any other council comments? Yeah, Nick.
Shane, just looking at this means contiguous sidewalk from where to where and on both sides of Vandiver then? There is existing sidewalk on across from these that we're talking about, right?
Right.
But do we know, like from Oakland Gravel to how far then would we have sidewalk on either side?
I know it connects to existing sidewalk at the Parker
yeah.
roundabout.
Right.
West of there, Allison, do you know?
At least on the north side, I know that's true. And I think there's sidewalk on the south side as well.
Right.
Yeah. It's just good to see that kind of continuity happening in that area. And I agree, it's a significant, a good place to be doing this.
Any other council comments? No. Appreciate seeing us steadily getting some more sidewalks built for this. All right, so I'll make a motion to authorize staff to proceed with the construction of the Vandiver Drive Oakland Gravel Road to Parker Street Sidewalk Improvement Project. Can I have a second?
Second.
Second by Lisa. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, moving on. Sheila, will you please read public hearing 425?
Public hearing 425 is the proposed construction of a sidewalk along the west side of Oakland Gravel Road between Blue Ridge Road and Smiley Lane.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes. This project would construct a 5-foot concrete sidewalk along the west side of Oakland Gravel Road between Blue Ridge Road and Smiley Lane. The proposed sidewalk will tie into existing sidewalk constructed over the years by two previous public works projects and provide continuous sidewalk connecting three schools, a park, and a clinic. An interested parties meeting was held on December 11, 2024. Construction of the improvements are anticipated to be underway by the summer of 2026. Project has a cost estimate of just over $517,000, with 80% of the funding coming from MoDOT's Transportation Alternatives Program TAP grants or grant funds. The remaining 20% will be funded with the city's quarter cent capital improvement sales tax. We're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for staff?
How hard would it be to get it on summer of 2025?
Wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, we have
never
like
heard staff
temporary easements that we'll need to acquire and stuff like that. If it all goes well, maybe in the fall, but we'll see how it all goes.
Well, I just wanted to ask.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Would anybody from the public wish to speak on the proposed construction of sidewalk on Oakland Gravel Road between Blue Ridge and Smiley? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Any council comments come to you?
No. The comment is that I've had constituents reach out very excited about this.
Yeah. Okay, I appreciate the finally closing the loop, literally, in this case, for some of these for the sidewalks. So, all right, so I'll make a motion to authorize staff to proceed with the construction of the Oakland Gravel Road, Blue Ridge Road to Smiley Lane Sidewalk Improvement Project. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, moving on. Thank you. Sheila, will you please read Public Hearing 525?
Public Hearing 525 is the proposed construction of the Clear Creek Force Main and Pump Station Sewer Improvement Project.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes. David Sorrell, Director of Utilities. This is the public hearing for the proposed Clear Creek Force Main and Pump Station Improvement Project. So the Clear Creek Force Main and Pump Station were upgraded in 2010 and 11. There was some improper design and construction of the system that has subsequently resulted in six pipe failures on the section of Force Main that's highlighted in yellow. These resulted in unauthorized discharge of sewage into Clear Creek. DNR, we have two abatement orders with DNR that address some of these discharges. They both had monetary penalties. So we're proposing to replace the portion of 20-inch Force Main that's on the lowest part that is most susceptible to failure. It's approximately 2,500 feet, and it is that section highlighted in yellow. And we will install some additional air release valves and install the pipe properly. It also adds a bypass vault at the pump station, which allows us to take the Force Main out of service to perform maintenance without taking the pump station out of service. We could pump into a tanker truck, for instance, and continue to haul the sewage. Doing this work would minimize the potential for pipe failure in the future, reducing the potential for discharges and additional enforcement by MDNR. We held an interested parties meeting in August of 2024. We estimate this work would cost $1.5 million and we would be paid by sewer enterprise revenue funds. With that, I'd be happy to attempt to answer questions.
Questions for staff? Yeah, Nick.
Dave, can you remind me, when were we cited by DNR?
When were we cited?
Yeah.
Most recently, we had a break in February of last year, and we had a closed session, if you remember, where we had the abatement order that we discussed.
Right.
That had cost and damages of $3,203.22 and administrative penalty of $13,677. Previous to that, in December 16, we brought to council a abatement order, and the cost and damages were $5,400, and administrative penalty was $15,000, and it basically included all violations up to the date of the abatement order being signed. So it's that many pages mm-hmm. of violations.
So I'm just trying to remember, did at that time when we were cited, did we try to do a repair on this, or is this the result of things that have happened since then?
No, we've done repairs on it each time that it's failed, and we did some changes to, we've added air release valves, and we did some modifications to the pump controls to reduce the amount of water hammer to the maximum extent. The pipe was overbuilt or over-inserted, which means they pushed the pipe together and they pushed it too far, which puts a lot of stress on the pipe, and they didn't have proper bedding on it. Lots of big rocks sitting right on the pipe. It was pretty much destined to fail. And, you know, we thought we had it fixed, then it failed again. And we thought we had it fixed. And at this point, we just need to replace it, I believe, or else we're just going to it's going to fail again.
Right, right. Okay.
And I'll point out that this was built back, you know, it's been 14 years ago. The way the CIP projects were handled was completely different. We had like four inspectors that did all the CIP projects for Public Works. They were doing streets, sewers, and, you know, an inspector can't be on the job 24 hours a day. Now we have three inspectors that are dedicated solely to sewer and stormwater projects. So the amount of inspection that occurs is much, much greater than it was 14 years ago. We also do TV inspections of the interior of the pipe before we accept anything. We find a lot of stuff that, if it's done wrong, that you wouldn't see above ground that you see when you take the camera through the pipe. So I think we have a lot less chance of something similar happening in the future.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for answering that question. Other questions, Herb? All right. I'll go ahead and open the public hearing. Would anybody from the public wish to speak on the Clear Creek Force Main and Pump Station improvement? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. I appreciate you responding to, that was a question I had, was like, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? So thank you for going ahead.
I think we've improved dramatically in the last 15 years on the level of inspection, and our requirements have increased as well.
Yeah. Any other council comments? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and make a motion to authorize staff to proceed with the final design of the proposed construction of the Clear Creek Forest Main and Pump Station Sewer Improvement Project. Can I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Nick. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? All right. For a moment there, I thought. It is. All right.
We're all waiting on somebody else.
We'll move on. No items under old business. So Sheila, will you please, for consent agenda, read the items on the consent agenda twice and call roll?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 925, 1025, 1125, 1225, 1325, 1425, and resolutions 1325, 1425, 1525, 1625, and 1725. Bills 925, 1025, 1125, 1225, 1325, 1425, and resolutions 1325, 1425, 1525, 1625, and 1725. Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
All right, moving on, we will have one item on new business. So Sheila, will you please read resolution 1825?
Council Bill 1825 is a resolution authorizing the city manager to enter into Love Your Block grant agreements to support neighborhood activities and minor home repair.
Do we have a staff report?
Sure, yes. Hi, I'm Lee Kotwitz. I'm the Neighborhood Services Manager in Housing and Neighborhood Services. Back on September 3rd of last year, the City Council approved the agreement with Johns Hopkins University for our Love Your Block grant. The grant provides the city $100,000 to fund a part-time staff member and money to focus in our central neighborhoods. It also provides us an AmeriCorps VISTA, and our VISTA is with us tonight, Diane Kretcher, and she's been working on our Love Your Block grant. The resolution before you tonight authorizes the city manager to enter into mini grants with organizations and individuals within our focused neighborhoods. Mini grants would be funded for up to $2,500. The applications will be open next Friday, February 14th. With the application period closing on March 21st. And we hope to announce the funding recipients by April 7th. And the projects this round need to be complete by August 31st. Our staff has been communicating with neighborhood leaders in the central city. And we also have been working on an outreach plan to let our stakeholders and residents know about this opportunity. We were also glad that this was the topic of the first ward meeting, the Let's Talk Local meeting, back on January 26th, so very recently. We were happy to be a part of that first event. Diane, is part of her responsibilities as our VISTA, is also putting together several meetings so that residents can get some assistance in finding out more about this opportunity and in completing their application. This is a two-year grant program, and the funder has been gracious in giving us some flexibility. So even though we have laid out our plan for this year, we do have the opportunity to change what parts of our community or how we want to approach this next year when we will give out a similar series of grants in FY26. We appreciate your interest and support with this grant program, and we would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Lee? Yeah, I've got Betsy. I'm sure I'll go to Betsy.
Give us some examples of what these grants can be used for in the central cities.
Sure. So it's pretty broad. They can be used for really whatever projects or activities might support residents there. So some things that we have heard, interest in community gardens, tool libraries. There's been some interest in how we can improve some of our public amenities. So, for example, there's a great interest in the city's lots on West Sexton, so it's possible there'll be some proposals related to that. There's interest in tree planting, minor home repair, so we could definitely work with nonprofits that would help owner-occupied residents with home repair as well. So it's pretty broad. The scoring of the applicants would be based on how it impacts the neighborhood, if it's a feasible project, if the budget that's proposed seems reasonable.
Thank you.
Yeah, Nick.
First, I just want to say I did read through the application, so well done, and congratulations on being awarded. There are a couple of census tracts, and I think I've seen a map about where these are, but can you describe more specifically where these are going to be located?
Sure. So it mentions, I believe it's 9 and 21, and that is our central city. So basically north of Ashe over to McBain and then up to Sexton, and then that goes up to I-70 on the west side. On the east side, it would basically take Paris Road also up to I-70. So those are the two census tracts that are our focus. We do have some flexibility to work beyond that. So in scoring the applications, we will give priority and give bonus points to projects that serve that pretty small area, but we would accept applications and likely will be funding projects that would surround that area. And also there are some pockets in our northeast that we think are places we need to focus. So for example, Whitegate, Indian Hills, the McKee Street Park area, those are also places that we think could benefit from some additional resources through MUNI grants.
And so you may not know at this point, but in the next year, in the following year, will you remain in the census tracts that are identified for this year, or might it move somewhere else?
I think we can move that around if we need to.
Okay, thanks.
And part of it, we will just see how we can be effective with these dollars and find out what the project proposals are and if we need to continue to work here, if we can spread those dollars around to other parts of our city.
Other questions for, yeah, Lisa. Oh, sorry, I was looking at Lisa, but pointing to Val. Valerie. No, it was you.
Yeah, I really appreciated talking with you at the Let's Talk Local meeting. I think this was very warmly received by the community. It does affect Central Columbia profoundly. And I did ask a couple questions heading into this. Did you tonight touch on tentative dates for public information sessions? That's something that I hoped to read off at this meeting.
Okay.
Just because the timeline is so condensed.
It is.
That I want to make sure that all of the public has an opportunity to hear how they can get their applications out there and how they can get assistance and guidance as they're formulating their plans.
Hi, I'm Diane Crutcher. I'm the VISTA with Love Your Block. I have scheduled information sessions, time and space at the library. And I believe, I don't remember the exact date, sorry, I didn't bring them with me, but so the grant application gets dropped on February 14th. I will have sessions the last week of February, one at the ARC that week and one at the library. And then the following week, same. And I've, you know, chose different times. I think there's a Saturday date in there as well. I'm trying to make it accessible for as many people as possible. I'm also looking at reserving space at the Armory as well. I tried to choose places that could be accessed by public transportation and that were open to the public.
Yeah, thanks for that. I did not mean to set you up for a trick question.
Oh, that's all right.
I merely wanted to get the dates out there. You did, or someone from Neighborhood Services did include it in the question packet. Is it all right with you if I read off the dates in that case?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I didn't write them down, but yeah, here they are.
I just wanted to ask so it was on the record.
Oh, right.
So I see Thursday, February 25th. Tentative.
Tuesday. That's a Tuesday. Yeah.
Oh, Tuesday. Yeah. Thursday the 27th at the ARC.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday, March 5th at the ARC. And Saturday, March 8th, tentative at the library.
Sure.
And yeah, I look forward to those. As soon as you have flyers available, let me know. I will be shouting it from the rooftops.
All right. Any other questions for staff from council? Yeah, Roy.
Yes, speaking of like places to communicate this outwardly, seeing that a few of those places were in Third Ward, is there any way possible you could look at some Third Ward spaces? Because whenever you are meeting people where they are, in order to get the information out to them, they're more receptive and you'll get a better turnout. So hopefully we can look for any space in Third Ward to also communicate and have that conversation, seeing that Indian Hills, Whitegate, and McKee Street.
Absolutely. I live in the Third Ward, so I would be happy to do that.
I just had a quick question. So in Office of Neighborhood Services, we used to have like a small grant program that sounds a lot like some of the things, activities that you talked about, like the potential neighborhood associations could do, like tool libraries or lending libraries and things like that. Do we still have that program, or is this kind of like our test to see if it would be a thing we should maybe consider again?
Yeah, so that funding, I believe, got moved over to pay for dumpsters. Now, because of the generosity of council, we've got a few more dollars for dumpsters, but then we have this opportunity. So yes, I think there are some neighborhoods that recall that funding support, and so I think that's one of the reasons they're eager to apply. This is a higher dollar amount. Those grants you're remembering were $250, so this is a bit more than that. Still not a lot of money, but more than the 250. And the cities that participate in Love Your Block, one of the things that they see as a result of this is that after the 2 years of the grant period, if there's enthusiasm and a need to provide funding, is that those cities have found ways to continue the programming beyond the 2 years of funding.
Thank you for clarifying that. All right, would anyone from the public wish to speak on Resolution 1825, the Love Your Block program? Seeing none, any closing council comments? I feel like we mixed in our questions and comments all together.
Good job.
All right. Sheila, will you please call roll on Resolution 1825?
Council Bill 1825, Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
All right, moving on. Sheila, will you please read the items that are under introduction and first read?
All items are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 1525, 1625, 1725, 1825, 1925, 2025, 2125, 2225, and 2325 first reading.
Thank you. We don't have any reports, which makes me nervous about upcoming council meetings and like how many reports we're going to have. So now we'll go to general comments. General comments of the public. Would anybody from the public wish to speak? Seeing none, we'll go to council comments, and we will start with Nick Foster. And Nick, can I tee, are you going to go with this first? Can I tee off? All right, so I'll just, a couple of years ago, we were having a lot of people coming to talk about, asking about what we were doing for homelessness. And if you recall, council appointed council member Foster to kind of serve as our liaison to the Boone County Coalition on Homelessness. And so I asked them to kind of provide us an update as we're having these conversations about housing and homelessness, just to kind of get the feedback from him. So, Nick, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. And what I'm going to do is throw a lot of numbers at you, but try to provide some context for those numbers first. But I will start with some numbers. And Project Homeless Connect, which is held on Thursday, January 23rd. This is an opportunity for people who are struggling with homelessness and seeking services to find many of those services in one location. It was held at Missouri United Methodist Church after being away from there for a while. And we had 119 clients who attended this year. That's less than in years previous when we normally see around 135 to 150. And sometimes the numbers around homelessness are somewhat elusive, so it's hard to say exactly why this was true. One idea is that it was at a different venue than it had been in the previous 2 years. My guess is it was a very cold day, and there were some people who, even though it was cold and they could be in a warm place, were already someplace where they could stay and didn't want to get into the cold to find another one. But at any rate, we had a little bit less than previous years. But many thanks to Missouri United Methodist for hosting. It's a great location. The church just recently finished renovations on the building after a fire some time back, and this was their first event in the refurbished space. Numbers regarding homelessness can be somewhat elusive, as I mentioned. I think the best measure is the by name priority list. This is the list of people in our community who are homeless and in the system for receiving services. Individuals on the list are assessed and then given a vulnerability score to determine where they land on the priority list. The Boone County Coalition to End Homelessness keeps this list and is made up of the agencies and organizations in our community who are providing services to homeless people and seeking to place them in stable housing. They meet twice a month, once a month to do business, and each other meeting, including the business meeting, to review the priority list. I believe we can get our best sense by the numbers of where we are with homelessness by the data that's kept with this group. I meet with them monthly for their business meetings, and that's where these numbers are discussed. At their last meeting on the 24th of January, we heard this, that at this point we're looking at around 120 more individuals on the list than we were at the same time, at the same point last year at this time. In December 23, there were 210 individuals on the priority list for housing. In this past December, there were 338, so almost an increase of 120. And you can see the percentages there are alarming. At the same time, at that same meeting, shelters were asked about available beds. A few beds were left at True North, the shelter for victims of domestic violence. There were two family rooms available that day at Harbor House, operated by Salvation Army. At Room at the Inn the night before, there were 88 guests. They keep 94 beds, but there were no empty beds for women. Flourish, which provides for homeless youth, was full as well. I also note that we no longer have Rainbow House, which was providing beds for children. Of particular alarm to me is the increase in the number of seniors that we are seeing. John Trapp at Room at the Inn gave me these numbers. In January 28 of 23, Room at the Inn had 58 guests. Of those 58, six were over 60, none were over 70, and only one was over 65. 10% of the total were 60 or over, 2% were over 65. Four of these folks are now known to be deceased. One is known to be alive, and the fate of the sixth is unknown. On January 28th of this year, exactly 1 year after those previous numbers, Ratty had 88 guests. That's 88 versus 58 the previous year. 16 were over 60. That's 16 versus 6 the previous year. Four were over 70, when there were none a year previous, and eight were over 65, and only one was over 65 the previous year. So a bare majority of the males over 60 are chronically homeless. Like most of the challenges with homelessness, this concern about seniors reflects a national trend. Seniors, like others, are being displaced from their homes largely due to increased rents and lack of housing that is affordable for them. Practitioners who are working to move unhoused people into stable housing will tell you that their most intransigent barrier is finding affordable rental housing for their clients. If I could wave a magic wand, and I cannot, to address our homelessness most effectively, it would be to create multifamily rental units of various sizes that would be affordable for low-income individuals and families. About 10 years ago, there was a general sense in the community that we could reach what was then called functional zero. That meant that while we would not be able to fully eliminate homelessness when we worked together, we would be positioned to provide services to homeless persons effectively and get them stably housed as they came into and out of the services system. Recent years have brought us new challenges and greater numbers that make functional zero, while still a worthy goal, much harder to obtain. And I just want to mention one other thing. And I read around this issue very often, and people send me things. But I was introduced to a group in Austin, Texas, recently called Community First, and it's a place where there are a lot of RVs being used, tiny homes, and it's really around the work of a single man named Alan Graham who took the initiative to make this happen. But what he says is the main issue related to homelessness is a, quote, profound, catastrophic loss of family. He believes that's at the root of chronic homelessness, and I think he's got a good point. And when I thought about it in my own life and thought about what's true for many others, I'm sure that if we all thought about our extended, our immediate families and our extended families, we would be able, many if not most and of us, would be able to identify people in our families who, except for the support they receive from their families, could very well be homeless. And I think that that's a significant issue and one that challenges us as a community to be in the breach when family is no longer there for people to be able to meet their needs and to move them into homeless. We're facing some significant challenges. It's going to take a long time to solve it. And in my mind, a large part of what we need to do is simply find ways to manage this in the meantime while we're in the process of developing the housing we need.
Thank you, Nick.
Any questions about any of that?
I think for part of it, I viewed it as part of the additional data as we continue to build out the strategies and solutions that we're asking for staff to come up to us. Like if we're thinking about where incentives are for types of housing, how can we put it that way? It's part of my thinking on it.
Yeah, and I think that the Housing Trust Fund is one of those places where we can begin to at least experiment on what might be effective in the community here.
Do you have anything else to add?
I do.
Okay, I'll let you go.
I had a constituent reach out to me about concerning potential doxing of individuals whose addresses appear on the summary list of those who are applying for boards and commissions on the city council agenda. I reached out to the city clerk and the city attorney to ask about this. As a result of those, I want to recommend that we redact addresses from the boards and commissions applications summary list in published city council meeting agendas.
And so this would just be for the part that's attached to the city council agenda, not the applications that are coming into.
Yeah, and I think it's important. What we would still have access to those addresses because we receive all those applications. And these things would also be sunshinable. So if someone were to ask for these under a sunshine request, they would still be able to receive it. But it wouldn't be published on the front end. And I think that in light of concerns that people have about their private information, that this is a simple step we can take and something we can do to help a little bit.
Is there any objection or concern to removing the address from the summary list? Yeah, Lisa.
If anybody has a car, all of their information is readily accessible on the Boone County Assessor's database. So redacting isn't going to really do anything to actually make their address untraceable.
I don't think it's going to be untraceable, but it's going to be harder to find. It's not going to be as easy. You can't just be annoyed about somebody on some board or commission. You would have to then go to the county website.
Well, there's other information that we ask on our applications that is also pretty private and personal that
We don't publish all the applications, though. Those are available simply to the council.
Valerie.
Yeah, from my perspective, what's practical and important about this, even though just about anyone who's clever and has the internet can find your address, I like having it redacted on the council agenda because I don't think that it's very comfortable for people to have their addresses attached to something that may be viewed politically. And I think that when you're doing something where you might come to a meeting and speak, something where there are other applicants, there is more opportunity to get doxxed or more feeling of vulnerability because you're speaking in public. And I think that separating the location of that information is meaningful.
I'd just point out one other thing, that the rules, and Sheila pointed this out to me, the rules do require that when someone speaks at the podium that they give their address, but we don't enforce that, and people have taken to just providing the ward in which they live. We can always follow up and ask questions if we need further information in that regard, but we're already practicing this to some degree.
And Sheila, remind us, if you wouldn't mind, for that part, the history of that was so that we could get their names correctly for record keeping?
No, the history is so you guys knew if this person was right next door to the property in a completely different ward, in a completely different city,
okay,
or whatever, because a lot of the projects, planning and public works projects, improvements, utilities, if you don't know where they live, you don't know how impacted they are, and some people's impactfulness might help you make your decision versus others.
Okay.
But not, that's for historically in the minutes for asking people to state their name and address. Historically for the summary list, I think it was just to provide it to you guys so you knew kind of where they were in whatever ward.
I find that helpful information to have, or which ward they're in, too.
And it will continue to be on the application.
We'll continue. The summary list will have their name and their ward if you guys choose to not have their addresses on there.
And then the address will be on the application that we receive.
Correct.
Other who have not spoken yet, comments? All right. Did you have another one?
Yeah. We can still request their address even by sunshining ourselves. Is that correct? For council information?
Well, you would still get their application, so you would see their
So the question that I had about stating your address, was that a requirement in our ordinances?
It was a resolution that talked about
meeting
procedures
protocols
at the council meetings, but it is an outdated procedure. Or resolution, because it talks about smoking in the council chambers, which is not really allowed.
Yeah.
Okay, something to visit.
I would be in favor of revisiting that. I know that at planning and zoning meetings, we also used to require address, and that is very sensitive to the type of applications they review. Knowing the ward, I think, is just as reasonable.
So if I'm not getting 100% of general, is there a general agreement to remove the address on the posted summary list and just have ward and name?
Yes, for me.
Okay with that?
I mean, it's not that.
Okay. Yeah. So I know either that or I will have Nick make a motion and do a vote. Nancy, advice?
Either is fine.
But I don't want to push it through. So do you want to do a vote? Since you did this.
Yes, do a vote.
Okay, we'll do a vote. All right. Nick, do you want to make a motion?
Well, I'll try this, Nancy. If I don't put it in the right form, you can help me. But I move that that we redact addresses, or we instruct the city clerk, I suppose, to redact the addresses from the boards and commissions application summary lists, which are published in the city council meeting agendas.
I'll second. Any other discussion on this? All right, Sheila, do you want to call roll?
Sure. Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
No.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for that. Anything else?
Yeah, now? I'm talking than usual, and so I apologize. But shout out to Public Works, these will be short, regarding parking tickets downtown. I actually heard a story on the radio last week, I think, that basically said, those of you who are parking downtown and are thinking you're not going to get ticketed, you need to think about that again, because they are happening. So I know that it took a while, Shane, to get hired up for that, and it's being effective. I had three people, a couple of months ago, I had three people within a week on separate occasions in three separate different places complain to me about parking downtown and the people who were parking over a long period of time. So it's good to see this. We believe in the rule of law around here, and so I'm glad to see that the rule of law is being followed. And then just one quick note about the Columbia Values Diversity Celebration last Thursday morning. I have a tendency to refer to this event as the Diversity Breakfast, but really it's a celebration. And I think, oh, hello.
It's just a phone outage of the 911 phone lines. So to reach emergency services, call 311. My PSA of the day.
Okay. So there's several words that stood out for me. One is that Columbia values diversity. It's in the name. And we've been doing this for 32 years. We value diversity. It's important to us, and we celebrate it. And I think that's important. The theme of the day was Columbia takes action. So there is that word action. We need to do something in order to maintain and to support the kind of diversity that we want to see in the city. And then the third came from a speaker who used the word rededication. And I think that from time to time, it's easy for us to lose sight of our values, to lose sight of those things that are most important to us. And it's important to be reminded about where our values are, and in that case, to rededicate ourselves to that. So I think in my mind, I'm rededicating myself to these issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is a deep community value. I rededicate myself to these things and encourage others to as well.
Don.
Just one thing, and the Carlin, I'll direct this one. I'm going to request, I didn't get my question in time, so that I know he's not prepared. So possibly next council meeting, if we could ask David Sorrell to talk a little bit about, he sent an email on the 23rd about a record level of power generation with the Columbia Energy Center because of the cold spell. And given our upcoming and ongoing discussion about the electrical grid and the transmission line, does it play into it? Does it tie into it? How does it affect it? Kind of how that all goes together. And like I said, since I didn't give him a chance to prepare, I'm willing to wait until next week or next meeting.
He's already had that question, so he's prepared to talk about it.
No, he's not.
No, I sent that out just because I thought it was very interesting and that everybody should be aware, but we had the record amount of generation of electric energy that cities ever produced in a 24-hour period of time. Off the top of my head, I want to say it was about 1,600 megawatts. We used about 4,100 megawatts that day. So we still were importing a lot of energy. So we don't turn that on because we want to. We turn it on when MISO determines that it's economically feasible for us to operate that unit.
Okay.
And they need the energy generated. Well, you got to remember, Thomas Hill's a 1.1 or 1.2 gigawatt facility. It's out of service right now. So when you got 1.2 gigawatts that's not in service in central Missouri and you need energy, it just makes sense that they're calling our unit to run. And that's the only time we run is when it's economically feasible for MISO to ask us to operate.
Okay, so basically it's at MISO's request.
Yes. Okay. That's the only time we ever turn anything on, unless we're doing work and then we need to test something and then we'll schedule to run. But we offer the unit every day and we say, if we are dispatched, we're going to charge whatever, $55 a megawatt. And they put that in their computer and they say, well, we need that and yours is cheaper than this one, so we'll turn yours on. Okay. And just so happened we ran most of the day that day.
All right, so basically it was just kind of an interesting fact.
It's an interesting fact.
Okay, and then, we're in danger of...
No, it didn't have anything to do with our system or how anything was operating. It's the fact that Thomas Hill's not in service. As you have more coal-fired facilities that are getting taken out of service, you're liable to see our facility be called on more and more because, as we all know, you can't turn on a solar panel and you can't turn on a windmill. So if you got to have some energy that you can rely on and flip on between 10 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon, they're going to call on facilities like ours.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. Thank you very much.
That's it. Thank you, Don. Betsy?
I just had a couple comments. One is to sort of comment on the shooting that the officer-involved shooting over the weekend. I'm surprised that we didn't have anyone speak to that, but... I do want to reinforce that we do have an internal audit that goes on looking at whether the procedures were followed, along with the Missouri State Highway Patrol looking at that. And I do expect that both of those will come back, that we followed the proper procedures. I'm also sure that our police department looks at that, not just from the internal investigation, but just to try and see if there's other things that we could have done. So. We'll wait for those reports, but I expect everything was done properly. The other thing I wanted to say to Shane was the roads. Thank you so much. I know I emailed you all about Cliff Drive because we had an estate sale going in at the top of the hill over on Cliff Drive, which was nothing but ice on both sides of the hill, and the house was on the top. We did have 2 days worth of cars parked on both sides of this fairly narrow road with nothing but ice in the middle. I know your guys came by and tried to help, but we needed to move all the cars to actually be able to do anything about the ice. Some of it did melt, but not a whole lot, and it was pretty thick. But anyway, I wanted to thank you all and thank your guys for showing up and trying to make that a little better. As best I know, no one broke anything. I like bones, but there was certainly a lot of slipping and sliding going on that hill. So I wanted to thank you all for your at least trying to help on that. So thank you.
Thank you. Valerie?
Yeah, I did have a couple things I wanted to talk about. We touched on it earlier, the Let's Talk Local meeting that we had. I got to be the first guinea pig for this. And I'm excited for all of the other council members because this was wonderful and you're going to love it. Citizens responded very positively towards this. I thought we had a very good turnout, especially for the first try. Some of the things that I think are bright spots is that they went out to meet in a community place where people are familiar. They didn't ask people to come to City Hall, and they contacted me to suggest some places, and I talked to some constituents. They brought food. They met on a Sunday, on a weekend when people aren't working, and they at least offered childcare. I don't know if anybody took them up on it, but the fact that that was an offering, I see you knocking down the barriers, and I love it. Thank you for doing this. Wonderful program. And somehow wrapped up in that, the Love Your Block program that we talked about there and was on the agenda tonight. I'm quite excited about this program. I'm quite excited about the opportunity to have citizen-led projects where people identify the needs in their own areas and say, this is a small project we can do, and that citizens can apply to it. Small groups of citizens, neighborhood groups, schools, churches can apply to that. For me, it's going to be really important for us to get the word out thoroughly and make sure that we engage everyone and make sure that everyone has an opportunity to apply and receive assistance with their applications. So I'm looking forward to the process and I'm going to talk about it as much as I can. The last thing I want to acknowledge, over the past 2 weeks since our last meeting, we have engaged in some more, I guess, public discussion about protecting our immigrant population in Colombia. And I really want to acknowledge that we are a very diverse town. We're a university town. People come here from all different kinds of places and all different kinds of immigration statuses. And our immigrant population is extraordinarily important to our community, to our economy, to our businesses, our local universities. And we want to do everything we can to make people feel safe in our city. At this point, I'm looking forward to more conversations to find ways to make people feel safe in Colombia.
Thank you, Valerie. Lisa.
Yes, I have several things, Mayor. First, back in October, I shared with everyone openly that I am in a battle with breast cancer and encourage people to get their diagnostic testing, and I still encourage people to do that. I wanted to share on a positive note that I'm immensely grateful to the team's medical, my church, family, friends, the spirit of community. I am 14 chemo infusion treatments down. I have two more to go with a hopeful diagnosis and prognosis. I should do, for clarification, a hopeful prognosis. And I'm so grateful for the kindness and prayers and support. And I wanted to throw that good energy and gratitude out there. I wanted to thank the entire staff for being here since 8 o'clock this morning and for all that they do to help make this city run and for staying late for city council meetings. I wanted to share an event that my husband and I were able to attend. We attended the Southern Christian Leadership Conferences event at Log Providence Missionary Baptist Church, We heard a moving sermon from DeMarcus Thomas Brown and Powerful Music Council. Representative Roy Lovelady was there as well, and it was a joyous event. I'm working with the mayor and DeCarlin and staff on two priority issues in Ward 2. That's the Park DeVille trash and a possible Prairie View Hills neighborhood improvement district. They're still on, and I can't wait to check those off. So those are still in the process. I'm also looking forward to working with staff and the council to address concerns raised in the community survey, especially those related to pedestrian safety and litter throughout Columbia and helping our police. Last but not least, I want to say congrats to the Columbia Police Department for making arrests associated with the shootings that took place on January the 27th. My last question that can be addressed at the end is, how close are we? I know we're making progress, but how close are we to having a fully staffed professional police department? Thank you, Mayor.
All right, thank you. Note that for when we get to the staff comments. All right, Roy.
Okay, I just got three. One about the Let's Talk Local Ward meetings. I definitely was instrumental in talking about this. I talked about this so much with DeCarlin, and I'm kind of sad that I won't have the opportunity to participate in them. But to everyone listening and watching at home, seize the opportunity to meet your local ward representatives in your particular ward in order to talk candidly about things that are important to you and your ward, as well as being updated from the council member about things that's going on at council. Secondly, will be the diversity breakfast. Adonica Coleman at the end of the breakfast gave comment about how it's great that we celebrate those moments and we all come together and give testaments of things that we're doing, but we must be intentional after that breakfast is over about still doing that same work of being diverse, intentional in our equity, and making sure that we're including all. So diversity, equity, and inclusion, making sure that we're intentional about those things, not just at that breakfast where everyone is being celebrated. And then I think that's it for me. Yeah, that's it.
All right, well, thank you. And I think on that note, you know, we as a community are going to continue to promote and protect the values of Columbia. It's in our vision, but it's something that we see in play every day. And ensuring that our community stays the best place for everyone to live, work, learn, and play. So, yeah, we will continue on that. And thanks to my fellow council members for constantly supporting that work. I just wanted to also raise up, I know sometimes we get so busy with things going on, but it is Black History Month, and we have lots of activities going on around town. Encourage people to go to our community events calendar on the city website. Parks and Rec, has the Armory has the exhibit every day from, I think it's 8 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, of African-American history in Columbia. We also have there's a film, Harriet, the film screening will be on February 12th, and then there'll be other events coming up later on. So just encouraging people to check those out. And with that, I'm going to kick it over to DeCarlin for staff update, including our CPD monthly staffing update.
Yes, ma'am. Chief Schlur, do you want to come up and talk about our staffing levels?
And while she's doing that, if you have anything to update.
Actually, yeah. So if we look at the screen, one of the things I'm excited about, we've really been working really hard to try to work on engagement. As a couple of times council members have mentioned, Let's Talk Local. We also had budget town hall meetings. But on March 15th, we're going to have a community summit. It'll be an opportunity for the community members to come out, talk to staff, help us talk about your budget priorities, look at our strategic plan, and look at some of the things we're working on. And so I really want our community members to come out. It should be a fun event. As the note said, this is not your typical government meeting. And so it's not. It's a time for us to really engage our citizens. So I'm excited. We stole this from Port St. Lucie. It was a community that we met during the Bloomberg process. And listening to them talk about their event and how wonderful it was for their community members, And I was excited, and I've been trying to bring it to us for the last 2 years. This year, we're going to have it. So,
awesome. Thank you. Chief Schlute, hi.
Hi. So as we sit here today, there's 24 officer vacancies and 2 sergeant vacancies. We have 14 currently in the academy, and I believe we have 6 or 7 in field training currently. So right now we're in the process of intaking applications for the March Academy, and that number kind of moves back and forth a little bit based on where people are in the process and if they get removed for different reasons. And I think right now there's about 17 folks left in that process as potential applicants, and I believe 3 of them are already post-certified. So cautiously optimistic we'll have a similarly sized class in March as well.
Thank you. Nick, follow
up. Post-certified meaning that they've already been through training, right?
Yes, that they're either, in this case, I believe all 3 of them would be coming from out of state. It may be 1 in-state and 2 out-of-state. So if they're in-state, they've already got their Missouri post. If they're out-of-state, they can go through a testing process with post and then qualify to get their license.
But previously sworn then, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, Betsy.
You said that cautiously optimistic, you have 24 vacancies, and then you talked about 14 folks that are in training now. Are they
I understand what you're asking.
Thank you.
I get asked this a lot. So when I say vacancies, those are actually people we could hire, jobs that are still open. So the 14 that are in field or in the academy right now don't count towards that number. So that's one of the reasons why patrol feels so short right now, because there's that number of actual vacancies plus 14 in the academy plus 6 or 7 in field training. So it compounds pretty quickly.
Well, it's not 50 what it used to be.
We're
improved.
Very proud of staff, yes.
So if everybody can just hang in there, we'll hopefully keep improving.
Yes, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah, done.
What is the date for the first academy graduation?
I can tell you that. Yet? We do.
14th.
March 14th. I believe 6 p.m. is going to be the time.
Okay.
And we're working on a location because this room is unfortunately booked. So as soon as we get the location, we will send out an invite.
Please do. Thank you.
Actually, this event is the next day, which prevents us from doing it in here. So it's DeCarlin's fault. Not really. But as soon as we get a date, we'll send out a location, we'll send out a formal invite to everyone.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you. DeCarlin, anything else?
That's it.
Nancy, anything?
I got nothing.
Sheila, anything? I'll go ahead and adjourn us at 8:13. Hey, everyone.